Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season two of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me season two is out now from Lemonada Media.
Oh boy, everybody, we have a fun episode for you today.
Oh, that's one way to describe it.
But before we get into today's episode, we have to thank our newest patrons, starting with our newest champion for actors' rights.
Woohoo!
Who is Kayla Smith. Kayla, we are so happy to have you here. Thank you so much for all the important work you do for actors everywhere.
It's so important. It's so important. Also, importantly, we have to welcome some new freaking members to Tony fucking Collette's inner circle. Wow, the circle is growing. Join the movement. We absolutely love to see it. We give a warm, warm welcome to Aaron Lawless, Aram Freeman, John Michael Brothers. I wonder if those are two brothers named John and Michael. I don't know. Either way, welcome. Kimberly Copin, Allison Holland, Gemma Varco, Gina Johnson, Marie Besgrove, Emily Wernicke, Aubrey Hamilton, Colin Stetson's saxophone, ELP Music, Lottie Draws, Zachary Folkman, Kaylee, Alex McRae, Vanessa Perez, Vanessa Renee, Sierra G., AJ Kwan, Tage Filmley, Claude Rains, and Aaron Love.
Ooh, so many new members.
That sounded like a poem.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
It was a bit of a poem.
It was a bit that rhymed.
Beautiful.
Welcome. We are so excited to have you guys. We also have a few upgrades this week, including my son, Hugh Mungo Cox. Hugh Mungo Cox has joined. Welcome to you. I mean, you've already been here, obviously, but you've upgraded. That's great. Along with James Boone and EP, we love you guys unconditionally forever, starting a while ago, but continuing on forever and ever till the end of time.
The unconditional love and support we can offer.
Hugh Mungo Cox, probably also related to Brian Cox, if he's your son. Brian Cox is either his dad or his grandpa.
Yeah, his dad. Right. Well, Brian Cox is dad, grandpa, or he could be my husband. We haven't figured it out yet.
Yeah, exactly.
And Hugh Mungo Cox could also be related to Hugh Grant. And so maybe it's like a joint child between me, Brian Cox, and Hugh Grant.
Maybe.
And we can all talk about who's who in the relationship next time.
Yeah, let's all talk about it.
That'll be a fun thing to have a little sit down about. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Brian Cox might be in this episode, so.
I guess you're going to have to keep listening to find
out. Keep listening to find out. And if you want to join the Patreon, you can do so by going to patreon.com/TSDWpodcast. And enjoy this episode. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba, you know?
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba, you're going to love it.
This is Emily.
Henley.
And Sammy, and you're listening to Too Scary, Didn't Watch.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Too Scary, Didn't Watch, the horror movie recap podcast for those too scared to watch for themselves. I'm Emily, and I am too scared to watch scary movies.
I'm Henley, and I'm also too scared to watch scary movies.
I'm Sammy, and I like watching scary movies, so I watch them and I tell you about them. So that you don't have to watch them, but you can know about them.
Oh,
and
God.
That's what we do here.
Perfect definition of what you do.
That's what we do here.
But before we do that this week, how are we doing?
Right now, Mabel's making biscuits on my lap and I need to cut her claws. Owie!
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 Mabel is Emily's cat, in case anyone doesn't know.
Yes, correct. Correct.
Speaking of cats, I am visiting my parents' house right now, and their cat was just is an outdoor cat, and he was just mauled by some unknown creature. They don't know whether it was a fox or a hawk or something. My parents live in the country. They're a very rural area. And basically, Oliver came like scraggling back to the house, like could barely move his legs. And he'd been like chomped down on in his like hind quarters. And now he's recovering. He's doing a lot better. But he's walking around and he looks like he looks like a fancy poodle. Like, you know, that's like his his, like, because they had to shave in certain areas. So it's like
so funny when an animal, especially a cat, gets shaved, because like you're not used to seeing that.
No, his whole butt and like back is shaved, but then his tail is left, and so it's like a big furry fluffy tail and then just like the skinniest little gray cat body you've ever seen. And then they had to shave like around his top too, and so it's like
around his top.
It's very funny. He honestly looks like a fancy cat now, even though he's been injured. Anyway.
Oh, well, I'm so happy that he's alive. That could have been worse.
I know. I'm impressed that he was able to fend off whatever this creature was. And also, like, what? Who would do that? You know?
Who would do that?
Who would do it?
Probably those sharp little claws, like the ones that are digging into Emily's lap right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Probably what saved him.
They also can really bite.
Yeah.
Those little tiny teeth are sharp.
Well, they just like get on their back and they just go to town. Like they'll just like
use their little legs. Back feet to go like pew, 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 pew,
pew, pew, pew, pew, pew. Rapid fire.
Yeah. What about you guys?
Well, I went to a strip club this weekend.
Not just any strip club either, like the premier strip club.
It's a fun one.
Of Los Angeles.
It's Jumbo's Clown Room. And I don't know, is it even a strip club? It is like dancers. There's not a ton of stripping happening, but
yeah, it's a pole dancing venue.
They don't allow nudity. So, right?
They do not. Well, there's a law, I believe, at least in California, that you cannot serve alcohol if they are nude. So if you want to go to a nude strip club, there's no alcohol involved.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hmm. So obviously you wouldn't ever do that.
Imagine going and doing that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
That's dark.
I think it's really dark. I think that I very much understand why that would be a law, and it seems correct. But also, that's really sad.
I'm shocked that strip clubs don't serve, or I guess that there are strip clubs. I don't know. I just thought Jumbo's Clown Room was unique in the sense that they didn't have nudity.
No, Cheetah's didn't have nudity. And I don't know what has happened to Cheetah's. God, I loved Cheetah's. But Cheetah's has been like bought by somebody else before the pandemic, I think. And so I don't know. But yeah, they also weren't nude, but.
Yeah. But it was just, I mean, it felt so like it felt like a real marker of maybe starting to come out of the other end of a pandemic. The pandemic is not over. And who knows what the holidays will bring. But yeah. I've gotten a booster. Everywhere in LA is checking vaccine cards. And so I felt totally comfortable being at a strip club, no windows in sight, filled with people. And it just felt like a real monumental moment. And
it's very exciting.
It was very exciting. I had a great time.
You got a t-shirt?
I got my second t-shirt. I've already had a t-shirt from them, but I felt like it had been 6 years and they'd probably changed it. And I was right. So got a new version of that t-shirt.
Great. That's great.
I love that. I'm jealous. I want to go to Jumbo's.
What about you, Emily? What's up?
Well, I got my booster this morning, so I'm feeling extremely low energy. I just caught myself just like listening to you guys and being like, and having like no visible response. So if I'm weird in this episode, that might be why. But I'm really excited to have gotten my booster. If you live in LA, the Silver Lake CVS just is taking straight up walk-ins. They've got a great system. It was easy. It was easy as heck, and I'm really thrilled to be boosted. And you know what I've been feeling like this week?
Hmm.
It's really cool. I've been feeling like, you know, sometimes you start a project or a task or a skill, or you just start doing something and it takes a while for you to see where that led you just mm-hmm. in life. And I'm mm-hmm. certain that I'm expressing this in the best possible way. I have felt in this past week, honestly, just like I'm really seeing a lot of those efforts sort of come pay off in some ways, or like I'm seeing how pursuing what I enjoy has been a good thing.
That's great.
I'm feeling that way with the podcast so much and with the stuff that I make, and I'm just like, oh, what a cool reminder to just try as hard as you can to pursue the things that bring you joy, because probably good things will come from that.
Well, if you can. Freaking heartwarming, Emily. Thank you.
You're welcome. And I know this episode comes out after Thanksgiving, apparently. But, you know, this is a lot to be grateful for. But you can be grateful not just on Thanksgiving. All the time you can be grateful, and you should. And I am. And I also feel tip top.
Thankful for that too.
Mm-hmm. Thankful for that.
Speaking of feeling tip top.
Speaking yes! of feeling tip top, let's do what we came here to freaking do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We have an exciting movie this week. This mm-hmm. was the choice of our Halloween giveaway winner. Gabby Varillo chose this week's movie.
Thank you, Gabby.
Thank you, Gabby. You picked a good one. I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm excited as well. She picked The Autopsy of Jane Doe, which came out in 2016. It was directed by Andre Overdahl, written by Ian Goldberg and Richard Ng, starring Brian Cox, Emile Hirsch, Ophelia Lovavond, and Olwyn Kelly. And it is available on Shudder.com.
Woohoo. Very exciting.
Yeah, I feel like this one had actually been requested quite a few times, and it had been on our radar for a while. So Gabby just gave us that little push we needed.
Mm-hmm. Sammy, had you ever seen it before?
No, this was my first time watching it. And man, Brian Cox, what can you say?
Mm-hmm. He can do anything.
He's so good.
I love that he is in horror movies. What a blessing for us, for this podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
And he's my relative, somehow.
Your dad or husband, we're not sure.
He could be either. Either works.
It's crazy, Hanley, how you don't know who your dad and husband are. I know I'm married, but to who?
Just one crazy night in Vegas. So dumb. I actually know nothing about this film, except that people mm-hmm. request it all the time on the mm-hmm. podcast, and people DM us all the time about it. So I don't know anything about the plot.
I feel like I thought it was older. 2016 is pretty recent.
Yeah,
I mean, it's not super recent, I guess. It's 5 years ago, but I just would have thought this movie was older somehow.
You know, it's crazy, and it's kind of too bad, and maybe everyone's this way, but like every time I hear the year 2016, all I can think about is the Trump presidency now.
Yeah, of course.
Pretty defining part of that year.
I'm like, how is this movie connected to the Trump presidency? Uh-huh. Like, that's the first thing my brain does. It's like, it's not connected. There's nothing to do with that.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, I mean, 2016 was bad.
2016 was super bad.
It was no 2020, but it was bad.
Yeah.
It was the 2020 of the 2010s.
2016 is like, though, like when it was like my innocence was over then. You know, my childhood fully ended at 2016. It was like I couldn't.
Yeah, it was brutal.
The cloth was taken over my removed from my eyes. What's the phrase?
I don't know.
The cloth was removed from my eyes. The cloth.
We know the phrase.
We all know it.
The clock is over.
I really appreciate how much you tried to say all of the options at once.
When in doubt, say it all. Say everything.
Just say one confusing combination of all of it.
Does anyone even know if that is even close to being the phrase?
Wool from your eyes?
That sounds right. That's closer.
Anyway. Yeah, okay. 2016. Also, is Emil Hirsch bad?
Oh, I hadn't heard. Is he bad?
I think he might have been.
I could
been
be
me-too'd.
Wrong, but I think he is bad. I could find a better way to express that.
Interesting. I had not heard, but I wouldn't, be shocked.
But couldn't be. I mean, he was also in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which was after this.
Hmm.
Oh, yeah. He had an assault conviction in 2015.
Yeah, he went to jail.
Oh, God. Attempting to strangle Paramount Pictures executive Daniel Burnfield at Tao nightclub.
Holy shit.
He claimed he did not remember what had happened.
That's not really a helpful argument, I would say.
But then he pleaded guilty to a misdemeanor assault and was sentenced to 15 days in jail and fined $4,750.
They could sentence you to just 15 days? That sort of feels like, why? I mean, look, don't get me wrong. I wouldn't want to go to jail for 15 days, but it does feel like just do a month at least.
A month at least.
I don't know. That's just so sort of weird to me.
Yeah, kind of crazy that he's just continues to work. I'm looking at his filmography.
I mean, everybody does.
It didn't affect his work at all. In fact, it seems like he's been working more since the...
Well, good for him.
What the fuck?
Well,
interesting.
Sorry. It's honestly, I mean, just a lot of, there's a lot of bad men, and some of them are actors. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
And so we talk about movies. It's just bound to happen.
It's bound to happen.
But let's talk about the movie.
Talk about the movie. The budget was $6 million, and the box office was $6 million.
That's nice. Clean.
Easy peasy. It has 87% on Rotten Tomatoes, a 65% on Metacritic, and a 6.8 on IMDb.
Pretty high.
A return to form.
Mm-hmm. The director, Andre Overdahl, was inspired to make this movie after seeing The Conjuring. He previously directed Trollhunter, so this was his first foray into horror. Trollhunter's like...
What is Trollhunter?
It has some little scary elements to it.
I just immediately thought you were talking about like the Disney movie Trolls.
Me too.
No, it's literally about like hunting trolls. He's Norwegian, so it's I've seen it. I don't totally remember. I know it was good.
Okay.
But yeah, so this is his first English language film and his first like true horror film.
Sammy, you've seen so many movies. It really blows my mind.
You know what's crazy is I get so overwhelmed by how many I haven't seen. Like, there's so many movies in existence.
Man, oh man, oh man.
And so even though I feel like I really watch a lot of them, it's still, I can't keep up.
I just watch the same, like, 8 movies over and over and over and over again.
Well, I like to do that too. And that also stresses me out. It's where it's like, well, now I want to watch The Matrix again, but it's like, well, I've seen it and I got to watch other movies.
Wow. Yeah.
So,
yeah,
it's
I do
tough.
I like that quality about you, Sammy, though, is that when you see a movie that you really like, you want to just watch it a few more times each time with someone who hasn't seen it yet.
Oh, it's my mm-hmm. favorite thing. It's my favorite
yeah,
thing.
I love that.
But even I like to just rewatch things alone. Sometimes I was listening to the score of Mandy and what a great movie. It just made me want to watch it again. So there's just, I get really stressed about not having enough time to do all the things I want to do.
The thing is, you want to rewatch cool movies like Mandy, and I'm like, I'll watch It's Complicated for the 50th time.
Hey, It's Complicated is good.
And I feel good about that choice.
I feel good about that choice for you.
I think you should. Stephen King said of The Autopsy of Jane Doe that it is a visceral horror to rival Alien and early Cronenberg. Watch it, but not alone. Which, like, I'm a little confused, honestly, by that quote.
It's okay.
Like, did he even see it?
Yeah. I don't know.
Is there a lot of body horror stuff?
I mean, it's called an autopsy. It is definitely a lot of corpse, organs, all. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. A lot of corpse.
A lot of corpse.
It's one huge corpse.
It's a lot of corpse in this one.
Martin Sheen was originally cast as Tommy, who went to Brian Cox, eventually had to drop out due to scheduling conflicts. And Andre Overdahl said that Olwyn Kelly had the most difficult role in the film. She plays Jane Doe, the corpse. It is a real actress playing the corpse. And he credited her with making everyone else comfortable on the set, which, like, how horrible is that statement? Like, the naked woman having to make everybody else comfortable? Like, what? But it does seem like a really strange role to play.
I guess you'll tell us if it needed to be an alive woman. Yeah, I'm sure we'll find out.
I'm guessing the corpse moves.
I guess you'll tell us, but I can't say.
We don't want to spoil anything.
But at the moment, I'm sort of like, why did you make a woman do this?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. They probably could have had her be naked less. Mm. Probably could have cheated some stuff for sure. But she is very much naked in frame for most of the movie. And so, it would probably have looked weirder if it were a dummy.
Because you could tell. You probably tell it was a dummy.
Because she's very visible a lot of the time.
Yeah.
So Olwyn Kelly spent around 8 hours a day for 5 weeks lying naked on an autopsy table. Yeah, man, just imagining that role.
I hope it was warm.
I would be like, can I listen to a podcast? Like, what are you, like, I would go a little crazy. It's almost.
That's really wild.
Yeah, not being able to move. It's like hard work.
Yeah, I read that part of why they chose her is because she was very into yoga and was good at, like, not visibly breathing and could control that. She definitely looks dead the whole time, which I feel like is hard to do.
That's insane. Yeah. Jeez. Okay.
Yeah. So great job, Olwyn Kelly.
Great job.
That's all I've got for trivia. Should we watch this trailer?
Yes. I've never seen it.
Not what I was expecting. Can I see one?
No.
What's that for?
Make sure he's dead.
Sheriff, what happened?
No ID. No fingerprints in the system.
For now, she's a Jane Doe.
He needs my help right now. 11 o'clock, I'm all yours.
Subject is in her mid to late 20s.
Hair brown.
Black blood warning now.
Eyes gray.
What happened to you?
First, they bound her. Then they ripped out her tongue, poisoned her, paralyzed her, forced her to swallow the cloth. What is that?
Dad?
No one could see what we have seen.
What?
I like don't know what I was expecting, but like that was like so aggressively not what I was expecting.
It wasn't really what I was expecting either. Yeah.
Whoa.
It's scarier than I thought it would be.
It looks really scary.
It's really scary. It's really scary because, well, I don't know what happens, but just the idea of them also just doing an autopsy and kind of like discovering that she's been like killed in such a disturbing way. I didn't even like think about that, but that makes a lot of sense. It's really upsetting.
That is really upsetting.
Yeah. It's.
She's beautiful.
Yeah. And I mean, I will say it's like, I think it would have lost something had it not been a real actress. But that said, I hope that on the like close-up shots, they like covered her, like she was allowed to be clothed part of
the time. I'm sure she was an only, No.
Yeah.
That'd be crazy.
Oh my God. Okay, I am fascinated. I want to know what it is.
I know, it's a great setup and mystery, and I love those kind. Like, I thought it would be more of a kind of thriller based on it kind of being like a medical mystery, what's happening, but it gets like full horror for sure. And that's, you know, for our purposes, perfect.
That's
perfect. Got a little bit of both.
Ooh, Sammy, take it away, baby.
Let's take it away.
Let's get into it.
You know that scene in horror movies where someone's alone at home, cooking or whatever, watching TV, and a killer is outside watching them through their huge, open, enormous, completely clear windows that for some reason have no blinds or coverings on them whatsoever? Don't let that be you. You need privacy. You need 3-Day Blinds. They are the leading manufacturer of custom window treatments in the U.S., and right now they are running a buy one, get one 50% off deal. Just set up an appointment and you'll get a free, no obligation quote the same day. And if you're not very handy, that's not a problem, because the expert team at 3-Day Blinds handles all the heavy lifting. They design, measure, and install, so you can sit back, relax, and leave it to the pros. I feel like sometimes when you hear the word blinds, you might be thinking of broken, loud, dirty dorm room blinds, but I was just looking at 3-Day Blinds' Instagram, and I can assure you that is not what we are talking about here. These are good-looking blinds, shades, shutters, etc. They have thousands of options for any budget or style, no matter your unique need, whether it's motorization, to home automation, room darkening, or child safety. They're going to have something that's going to look gorgeous in your home, and it's going to keep those prying eyes away so you don't have to live in your very own horror movie. Right now, you can get 3-Day Blinds buy one, get one 50% off deal on custom blinds, shades, shutters, and drapery. For a free, no charge, no obligation consultation, just head to 3dayblinds.com/too scary. That's buy one, get one 50% off when you head to 3dayblinds.com/too scary. One last time, that's the number 3daiblinds.com/too scary.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, so we start at a crime scene and we see a detective who is Lord Bolton from Game of Thrones, which kind of threw me. Just
I remember that name,
there.
But I can't put it's a face Roose, with it.
Roose Bolton's dad, and he's like, he looks evil.
There's so many characters in that show. I hate the Bolt. The Bolt. He's the one who. Or no, is he the one that tortures?
No,
tortures Greyjoy. Oh, spoilers!
If you whisper it, nobody can. Nobody can.
That's Roose Bolton. So that's
Okay. So yeah, bad guy.
Correct family. He is not bad in this, but I just, you know, have that association in my mind, so I was immediately on edge. He is a detective and arrives at this crime scene where there's multiple victims. I think it's four victims of a homicide. Someone's been shot, someone's been stabbed, there's blood everywhere. And as they're surveying the crime scene, one of the other detectives said, "No signs of a break-in. It actually looks like they were trying to break out." And then they find our Jane Doe naked, kind of half buried in the yard under the house a bit. And they're very confused by her. They can't ID her. No fingerprints in the system. And so then we cut to our morgue where we meet Emile Hirsch and Brian Cox. Emile Hirsch is Austin and Brian Cox is Tommy, which, like, Brian Cox as a Tommy, what?
That makes no sense.
This is so
good. You guys just call him Brian Cox and Emile Hirsch. I mean, you don't need to, but Tommy?
It just, I can't think of a name less suited for Brian Cox than Tommy. It's not right. It's not a fit.
Maybe like Gene.
Oh, but I have to say Austin for Emile Hirsch is kind
of
a perfect fit.
That works. That works for sure.
Honestly, it's weirder that his name is Emile.
Yeah. It should be Austin.
It should be Austin. But so they are performing an autopsy on someone who is like has been severely burned, covered in, he's like crispy, and it's immediately like super gross, but this is their job. They're listening to like rock music on the radio. They're not obviously grossed out by it, but they're doing a very disgusting thing very casually. Brian Cox is kind of quizzing Emile Hirsch. Seems like he's obviously newer to this. Brian Cox has been doing it for much longer. We find out that they are father and son, and this is a family business, and it's been in their family for generations. And it's in the basement of their house. And are all morgues like underground? I feel like they always are in movies, but what way to make it creepier?
Yeah, I do feel like every time I see it on screen, it is underground. I guess
maybe
the implication
has something to do with the temperature.
Yeah, it's
that's what I was thinking.
Underground. But you can make it any temperature you want anywhere.
Also, that's true.
Also, I'm just thinking about, like, I grew up in South Florida, and you can't have basements there because it's water. It's too close to sea level. So, like, there've got to be morgues there.
I guess I can understand why a horror movie would choose it to be in a basement, though. It's definitely
maybe
spookier.
They just sometimes are, sometimes aren't.
That's probably right.
That's probably right.
Also, it might have to do with the fact that they're usually like part of a funeral home, and like the funeral home's like on top and the morgue's like beneath it.
Yes, maybe it is the funeral home is on top.
Probably what it is. Yeah. Way to solve that one.
Good job, Henley.
Oh, thanks. I'm sure. Who knows if it's even right? It sounds right.
It sounds right, and that's all that matters.
That's good enough for us.
We also see that they have a cat named Stanley. We're worried about that immediately.
Stanley's dunzo, bunzo.
And
although I trust a cat more in a horror movie than a dog.
That's true.
Yeah, true. But so they do their very gross autopsy. Cutting bones, like breaking open rib cages, throwing organs around. It's all happening very like cavalierly, and and they finish up and they're getting ready to go and close up for the night and head home. And then Austin's girlfriend, whose name is Emma Roberts in the movie, which just kind of made me laugh. Her name's not that in real life, but I just thought it was funny to have a celebrity name as your character name.
That is really funny.
So Emma arrives and they're supposed to have a date, and she comes into the morgue and is kind of asking to be shown around. Like, can I see the bodies? Like, she's interested in it. And Austin's saying no. Some things you can't unsee. You don't want to see it. And like, my dad would be mad. And then we see that Brian Cox is like in the room and he's like, I'm not mad. Like, if she wants to see it, let her see it. And he says, like, pick one. And she point, there's those little morgue drawers, the little cold lockers that they keep the bodies in. And so there's three that currently have bodies in them. And Brian Cox says, pick one. And she points to the one in the middle. And Emil Hirsch opens the one on the end instead and rolls the person out. And it's a woman whose mouth and eyes are stitched closed.
Ew.
And it's just very creepy and scary looking. And she tries to act not freaked out by it. Like she tries to put on a little brave face and she's like, I pointed to the middle one. Like the one I wanted to see is the middle one. So he's like, are you sure? And she says, yes. He opens the middle one and the body in that one is covered with a sheet. And but we can see that on the face, there's like not enough face there. The sheet is dipped down, show like seeming like his face is mostly gone. And there's blood on the towel. And they say, you know, gunshot wound in the face. And we don't see his face, but she notices he has a bell tied around his ankle and asks about it. And Brian Cox explains, back in the day, it was hard to tell whether someone was in a coma or dead. And so they would hang a bell on them. And if they heard it jingle, it meant, you know, the person was still alive. And he says, you know, I'm a traditionalist. I just, you know, like to keep it on just for funsies.
Just do it for fun.
We are gonna hear some bells.
But we definitely know that's gonna be coming back. And so after that, then Austin and Emma are getting ready to go out on their date, and as they're heading for the elevator, the detective from the beginning comes in with Jane Doe's body and says, this is a rush. We need to figure out what happened to her tonight so I can have something to tell the press tomorrow. This is like a, you know, quadruple homicide. There, people are asking questions. And so Brian Cox starts, you know, heading to do the autopsy on Jane Doe. And Austin tells Emma, you know, I need to be there for him right now. And at 11 p.m., I'll be all yours. We can catch the late movie. And she says it's been 2 years. So there's this implication. We infer that Brian Cox's wife, Emil Hirsch's mom, has died 2 years ago.
Okay.
And Emma seems a little hurt by this, like this maybe happens a lot is the kind of feeling we're getting. She's like, again, like it's been 2 years, but he's able to charm her and says, you know, I'll make it up to you and I'll see you at 11. And so Emma leaves and Austin goes.
Can you imagine meeting up with somebody at 11 to start a date?
God,
I'd be
no.
Like, no, I'm going to sleep. I'll see you another time. Do people do that?
I can't imagine a date going to 11.
Yeah.
I got to be home by 10 or I turn into a pumpkin.
I go to bed at 8:30 nowadays. It's my bedtime.
I got to be in bed at 10 reading a book or it's game over for me. But they head back in to start the autopsy. They turn on their fun music again on the radio. And they open the body bag, lay her on the table, and start. Step one of the autopsy is just the physical, looking at her, taking photos, describing anything they see. And so Emil Hirsch is taking Polaroids, and they're kind of saying, you know, Caucasian female, hair brown. They open her eye. We saw in the trailer she has these milky gray eyes. And so he's just like, eyes gray? And there's no external visible signs of any wounds or anything, but all of the bones in her wrists and ankles are shattered, but there's no bruising or anything. And so that's their first kind of, like that's shouldn't be. And then they open her mouth and see that her tongue is cut out.
Ugh, ugh, ugh.
and she is missing a tooth. And then they find that she has peat under her fingernails and in her hair, which I don't really know what peat is.
I think it's like a type of dirt. Like it's like what you use. It's like mulch.
Yeah. For some reason, that's also strange. I guess there was no peat like where she was found is what it is. Like there's just a lot of things that are not matching up to the state that they found her in. And so they're just at this point start just confused. As Austin is taking photos, he's taking a photo of her face and her nose slowly starts to bleed and a little drop of blood starts falling out. And then we see something moving in her nose and a little fly crawls out and flies away. And it's very gross. And then the radio kind of goes staticky and changes stations a bit. And we hear it changes to a news station and we're hearing thunder in the distance. And the news reporter is saying a storm, basically a storm is coming. Everybody watch out.
Okay.
Storms are brewing.
FYI, storm just. Everybody look out.
Look out. Look out. Heads up. Storms are coming. And after we hear that, the radio changes on its own again to another station and lands on a creepy old-timey song that goes, "Open up your heart and let the sun shine in."
I love it.
Austin and Tommy just kind of look at each other like, huh, so weird. Change it back to our freaking rock tunes. And so they just walk over and change it back to the station that they wanted to be listening to. And they start step two of the autopsy, which is cutting her open, which they cut a Y-shaped incision across her chest and like down her belly. And as they cut it, she starts really bleeding from it, like kind of pouring blood from it. Emil Hirsch says, that's not supposed to happen, right? And Brian Cox says, I've seen it before, but only in corpses or only in people that have died within an hour or two, like very fresh corpses. But the way her eyes have gone that milky color would suggest she's been dead much longer than that. And so this is, again, just not adding up.
What normally happens? Like, where does the blood go? You know what I mean?
I feel like it sort of like hardens, maybe. I have no reason to say that.
I mean, it's a good guess.
I'm talking about. I just started talking.
It's
why?
A good guess.
It hardens. You turn to stone.
I had to have an answer. Like, well, I don't. What was that?
It congeals.
I think what happens, and I also don't know, but I would think your heart not beating anymore has something to do with it because your blood's not in motion.
Yeah, so it's all just like
so
sitting
it's not
still.
Like,
but what
pump
it,
out? Yeah. Oh, doesn't it? Doesn't? Don't you get rigor mortis because everything sort of settles? Like it. You're, it might all settle at like the back of your body if you're laying down, so it wouldn't like pour out of the top.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that makes sense.
Right. There's nothing like thrusting it out of your body.
Right. This blood right now for her is being thrust.
It's being thrust out of her body in a way that just doesn't make sense. And so then they pull her skin open, revealing her ribs, and they bring in like bone cutter things and start sawing her ribs off, which is apparently how it's done, which of course they would, you know, do their research. Makes a lot of sense that this is accurate to the process, but yeah, you cut their ribs off so that you can look at their organs. So, and it shows it all. It shows them cutting the ribs off, kind of tossing them aside. It looks like little baby back ribs.
Wow.
Okay, that's enough.
And then inside, as they're looking at her organs, they see that her lungs are completely blackened. And Emil Hirsch says, I wouldn't have taken her as a smoker. Brian Cox says, no, like, you would have to be smoking a pack a day for 60 years for your lungs to look like this. Like, this looks to me like she died in a fire, like was breathing in smoke. But I would expect her to be covered in third degree burns based on this. He says this is like finding a bullet in someone's brain, but no gunshot wound.
Wow.
And then the rest of her organs are covered in little nicks and scars. Like they are like she had been sliced on her organs, which again doesn't make sense. What the freaking heck?
Are they scared? Are they getting really spooked?
Devilry.
Like, are they confused or are they like, wait, this is scary?
This is bad.
They're not as scared as they should be. That's for certain.
Well, yeah.
And I think, you know, they're scientists-ish, right?
Sure.
And so you get the
sense
curious that they're really trying to figure out why this is possible. I don't think they're yet thinking of anything supernatural, but they
right,
are.
Okay.
They're just trying to figure out, like, what the fuck's going on. They know something's not right, but they're not quite scared yet. But then we hear a banging somewhere in the building. There's kind of long hallways in this in this morgue. Austin says he'll go out to see what the noise is. And as he's walking down the hall, there's one of those convex corner mirror things, you know, like when you're reversing out of a driveway that shows you in all directions. And he sees down the hallway to the right from him, Jane Doe standing.
Oh, no.
It's just standing still.
That's not good.
Intact or cut open?
Intact.
Intact. Okay.
And he freezes in fear and slowly creeps to the corner to look around. And she is not there, of course, but it's a very creepy moment. I think this probably is that scared me the most. I really, it got me.
Yeah.
And then he hears the banging again from another room, goes in, and it's coming from the vents. And he looks in and it's kind of a jump scare. Something like runs by, but it is the cat, Stanley, and he is very wounded. I'm sorry, Henley, if this is
weird timing.
No.
Yeah. So he has been also seemingly attacked to a point that it's not looking like he will survive this attack.
So sad.
And Brian Cox comes in. He's heard some the commotion, and they both look really, really sad. Brian Cox takes the cat and snaps its neck.
Oh, jeez. God.
And then they take it to the incinerator room, and it's like a little funeral procession. Like they wrap him up, and it's done very like sweetly. Like they're very, very upset, and they carry him and they take him to the incinerator. And then they go back into the autopsy room, and one of the cold lockers is open.
Oh, that's not good.
And Austin just says, oh, I must have left this open.
Mm-mm. No, nope, Austin.
I don't think you did, Austin.
Austin, you should have gone to that movie.
You should have gone to that early show.
Mm-hmm.
But they get back to it. Step three of the autopsy is to look inside the stomach and intestines. And so they cut open the intestines and they find a flower. It's called Jimson weed. It is a poison flower that paralyzes you. They like pull out a little encyclopedia type book and look it up is how they're able to find this out. And they also read that it is not native to this area. It's more in the like northeast. The radio has switched back to the news now, and we hear that the storm is being upgraded to level 3 or something. And now Austin, at least, is starting to look pretty scared. And says, Dad, I think we should leave. I think we should get out of here. Mm-hmm. And Brian Cox says to him, if we start something, we finish it. If you want to leave, go ahead and leave. So there's some subtext there, some past that we don't know quite what that is, but it obviously makes Austin feel guilty and he stays. So they keep going through this contents of her stomach, and they find a cloth and they pull it out and unwrap it, and her tooth is inside of it.
Oh, God.
And Jesus. The cloth has Roman numerals scrawled on it and sigils, and it's just very strange. And they're like, what is this? Like, someone made her swallow this. This is, what is this, some kind of ritual? They don't know what to make of it. And yeah, at this point, they're both kind of like, this is impossible. This shouldn't be possible. What the fuck's going on? And then on the radio, the news reporter, weather reporter, starts sounding a little bit sinister and says, okay. One thing's for sure, you're not going anywhere tonight.
Okay. Okay.
And then it switches back to let the sun shine in.
Oh, no.
The sun shine in. And Austin at this point is looking around, looking really freaked out. Brian Cox is he's noticing something else on the body. And he takes a little scalpel and starts peeling her skin away from the muscle and peeling it back. And as he peels all of her like torso skin off, we see that it is tattooed on the inside of her skin.
Holy shit.
With more like sigils and symbols.
Oh no.
And that's crazy. Then the cold lockers start opening up one at a time.
Okay.
And then the lights explode and it gets completely pitch black in there. And I said out loud to myself, okay, time to get the fuck out of there. And then Brian Cox says, let's get the fuck out of here.
Okay, good. Thank you, Brian.
And
thank you.
I was like, okay, we're on the same page. They run to the elevator, but the power is out, so the elevator does not work. Mm. They go up the stairs where there is one of those little like basement doors that you would open up.
Oh yeah.
Tornado shelter
trap door sort of situation. Yeah.
But a tree has fallen on top of it.
Oh no.
And so they can't open it. And they go down to the office and try to make a phone call, but the reception is bad. It cuts out. And then they hear that little bell jingling.
No.
No.
And they hear it coming closer, and it does sound quite a lot like footsteps. And Emil Hirsch looks under the gap of the door of the office that they're in, and he sees some nasty old corpse feet.
Oh my God.
And panic starts, you know, pushing furniture in front of the door, trying to block it out. But at this point also, Brian Cox is in the bathroom, in the office. It's like same room, but in the bathroom. And because I think he hurt himself, so he's trying to rinse a wound that he fell or something. And then in the bathroom,
no, he's not pooping.
Okay,
don't worry about it.
When he said that, I was like, oh, he took a poop break.
No, it's fine. It's fine. Don't even think that. He's hurt.
You know what's so funny is I was just listening to How Did This Get Made? They talked about old. And one thing they said was everyone should be pooping constantly because of the way time is passing.
And because they have to eat so much.
Yeah. It really made me laugh. But yeah, no, Brian Cox is not pooping. Neither does anybody in old. Doesn't make any sense.
No one in movies poops because no one in real life poops.
That's right, especially
and
not
if
women.
If you poop, it's fucking weird.
If you poop, you're fucking freak.
You shouldn't do it.
Oh God. And he's not. So he's in the bathroom, but he then gets attacked. Emil Hirsch sees him like pulled back by something he can't see. The door slams closed. He's eventually able to break it open. And we see that Brian Cox has really been knocked around. He's like now got bruises on his chest and like belly. And he's like hit his head. He's a little disoriented. And he said something, whatever attacked me had her same eyes, like the gray eyes.
Ooh.
They say, you know, she's doing this. We need to figure out what the fuck's going on. Like it's her. So they decide to go back to the autopsy room.
Great.
And her organs have all rapidly decomposed that they had taken out of her. Just another weird thing that shouldn't happen. They're like, let's take her to the crematorium. Let's burn her. And before they can do that, the door locks on its own, locks them in the autopsy room. They cannot get out. And Austin finds an axe in the room. Do you guys like how I'm alternating between Austin and Emil Hirsch basically every time?
Perfectly fine. I haven't, honestly, totally I have fine. Not even noticed.
Okay, great.
Mm-hmm. Are the lights still off?
I think there's some little backup generator, so it's not like full brightness, but they're able to see.
Okay.
And Austin finds an axe and cuts like through the door, but as he is able to make a little hole in the door, we see those stitched eyes and mouth, that corpse lady, that first corpse we saw, like jump in the hole, and it's a scary little jump scare and it's very gross. So they don't want to go out anyways because that's where the reanimated corpses are. So they're like, fuck it, let's burn her here. They cover her in gasoline and throw a match on her, and the fire gets really out of control really quickly. Like supernaturally so. Like flames shoot to the ceiling in a way that they shouldn't, and she does not burn. So they are able to get a fire extinguisher and put the fire out, but she is not burnt at all.
Great, great, great.
They eventually realize, okay, well, they're gonna have to get out of this room. Maybe they're gonna take the axe with them. Take their chances, try to fight their way out. So they got to get out of here. They go into the hallways. It's very smoky now and dark, so they can't really see what they're doing. And they just hear that little jingling bell. There's a really creepy shot where it's just them looking down the long hallway. And you hear the jingly bell, and then you just slowly start to see the outline of a man coming towards them. And they run to the elevator because I think it's the only thing that they can reach. I think the stairs are behind the corpse guy, so it's like the only thing available to them. And they're trying to just close themselves into the elevator, even though the elevator is not working. Or maybe they're hoping that it's working by now because the backup generator's kicked in, but it's not working. But they get into it and they're trying to close the doors manually, like pressing them closed to protect themselves. And they're just hearing this jingling getting closer and closer. We see the man's face for the first time, the gunshot wound. So he's just no face, really. Just a big old hole in his face. And he gets to the elevator. They're not able to close it. And Brian Cox grabs the axe and brings it down on the corpse. Corpse falls back. But then we hear like a woman's gasp. And they step out of the elevator. And it's Emma.
What?
And she is.
That they axed.
Oh, holy fuck. Shit. Austin is inconsolable, sobbing. Brian Cox is shocked, also like stumbling backwards. And
is she dead?
They basically watch her die. Yeah, she's just kind of bleeds out in
Holy
front of
shit.
Them. Yeah, she got axed real hard in the chest. So she dies.
Holy shit.
She dies. They both kind of just sit down in shock in the elevator. And Austin is saying, this is my fault. Like, I told her to come back. This wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for me. Brian Cox saying, you can't blame yourself. This was my fault. and I'm the one who did it. And Austin says, you couldn't have known. And Brian Cox says, that's what they said about your mother. Like, you couldn't have known all that pain she was going through every day, and I just didn't notice. And so we assume that she died by suicide. And they decide in this moment, or they say, you know, there's something that Jane Doe doesn't want us to find, and we've got to see this through. We got to figure out what's going on. That's our only chance, or whatever. So they decide to go back to that autopsy room one more time, and they go to step four, which is the brain examination. So they get that bone saw, cut off her scalp, and they like peel it down her face. And so from the front view or top view looking down at her face, it's like she's basically wearing a mask of her scalp.
Ew,
it's so gross. Because they don't totally detach it. They just fold it down. And so, I don't know. I had never seen that before, and it really grossed me out.
Mm-mm. Ew.
And so they take a piece of her brain. Her brain looks normal. They're like, that's unusual. It's the first thing basically that's been normal inside of her. And so they cut a little piece of it off to look at it under a microscope, and it is alive. Her brain is
working,
an alive organ. Yes. And
so she's just been participating in all of this.
Yes.
She's just been alert, feeling her feelings while being autopsied.
How did they know that she was dead? Did they?
I don't think she has a pulse or anything. I mean, her heart was not alive.
Yeah, no.
Okay. Okay.
Everything is pointing to her being dead.
Yes, it's just her brain that is still functioning.
That's not possible,
that's
right?
That's terrifying. That's like
not possible.
So scary.
That better not be possible.
Yeah, that's the worst part to still be alive.
The worst part. And as Emil Hirsch is examining the brain tissue, saying, what the fuck? Like, this is impossible. Brian Cox is looking at, taking another look at that cloth that they pulled out of her stomach and folds it in half, and then it allows the Roman numerals to line up in such a way that they're able to read that it says Leviticus 20:27. They grab their Bible that they have in there, and the Leviticus 20:27 says, any man or woman that consults the spirits of the dead shall be put to death, for they are a witch. And they have a moment where, and the cloth also says the year 1693, which is the year of the Salem witch trials. And they have a moment of like putting it together, like the flower is from the Northeast, 1963. Like, this is the Salem witch trials, right? That's what this is talking about. Brian Cox is like, Salem witch trials weren't real. Like, they weren't witches. They were innocent people that were put to death, you know, by the accusations of children. And like, it wasn't real. They weren't real. They weren't witches. And then this is like, by the way, not at all where I thought this movie was going. How do you guys feel in this moment?
I was not expecting it to have anything to do with the Salem witch trials. No.
Same. And so then Tommy says, what if in torturing an innocent woman, they created a witch? Which I think is a pretty big logical leap.
Yeah, I'm like, huge.
That's bigger than when I guessed what blood does after you die.
Do you think in this moment he's like, well, I had to say something. I just had to have a guess.
Or not. You pitched something.
And so that's kind of what they think happened. What they deduce has happened is that by inflicting so much torture on someone innocent, that they unintentionally created the very thing they were trying to destroy. Which, yes, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense, and we're just going to have to accept that.
No,
we're just
going to go with it. It's like what we talk about when we talk about people being detectives or whatever in movies. And you're like, I could never be a detective because I would never make that logical jump. Like, they do it all the time and it ends up being right. But like, did the pieces actually fit together?
I don't think that they did, personally.
But okay.
But for the sake of it, let's just say that they do. Mm-hmm. And they realize she's keeping us alive they say that she's getting her revenge. This is her revenge. She's lived this over and over. And at this point, Tommy kind of drops to his knees next to her, looks at her and says, please don't hurt my son. Take me instead. Basically offering himself as a sacrifice, hoping that that will protect his son. And it's like an intense little moment. Zoom in on her face and zooming in on him. Music's intense. And then his wrists start shattering. His ankles start shattering. He starts screaming in pain. And he starts like bleeding through his clothes. His bruises on his stomach are looking very bad. And we see her, Jane Doe, healing and all of her skin going back together, looking like that, like nothing's ever happened. She's fully healing. And Tommy is just in excruciating pain, screaming. Austin's, trying desperately to help him, but can't. Tommy's reaching for a knife.
Yeah.
And Austin takes it and stabs him in the heart and kills him to put him out of his misery.
Does it work that way? Do you get to do that? Do you get to make that choice?
Well, so an interesting thing is that on the Wikipedia, it says that Tommy was reaching for the knife to be able to cut out his tongue to finish the ritual, which I don't think was made clear in the movie, but it does not work. And maybe it's because of that missed step that he couldn't cut out his own tongue, but it's not super clear. But Austin is just sobbing over his dad's dead body now. And Jane Doe is still on the table, kind of as we first saw her, looking the same as we first saw her. Still looking dead, but as if she had not been cut open at all. And he hears the detective at the door, is I think who they called from the basement. And he runs, the detective is at the door that's covered with the tree. And we hear him kind of saying, help me with the tree, like it's fallen over. And Austin is like, yeah, help, help, we need help in here. And the detective says, open up, open up, open up, open up, open up your heart and let the sun shine in.
Oh, no.
And Austin steps back, looks very scared. And there's a little balcony railing behind him. And he turns and sees his dad's dead body right next to him in his face. And he screams and falls backwards and falls off the railing. And like lands very badly on his head and he dies as well.
Okay.
And then we see the police arriving the next morning, thinking that they're coming back to, just get Jane Doe. And they stumble upon a crime scene that is very similar to the one in the beginning.
Oh.
And says, it looks like they were desperately trying to get out. And on the radio, we hear fourth straight day of beautiful sunshine. No storm happened.
No storm.
And the detective is really freaked out and says, okay, like we got to take Jane Doe to another, morgue.
Don't do it.
But he says, take it out of this county. Like, I don't want her in this county, which is a very funny, like, well. Okay.
She's like, it's another county's problem now.
Cool. And so they load her into an ambulance to transport her. And as the ambulance is driving away, the radio changes to let the sun shine in. And her toe twitches. And that's the end of the movie.
Oh. Whoa. Okay. So she was an innocent person who was tortured in 1693 to death. And since then, she's been coming back as a corpse to kill people. Why hasn't she done it more? And why haven't we noticed the trend?
Probably because now? People are just shifting it.
People keep moving her county to county.
Yeah. For 400 since, years.
Freaky.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it was really not. Yeah. Unexpected ending for sure.
How is this movie like Alien?
Exactly.
That's what. What?
Yeah, I was very confused by that quote.
Like, I thought for sure that there was going to be a literal, like, alien in her body or something like that, like, from that quote, but...
Yeah, it's a bizarre quote. And, like, Cronenberg also no, like...
I don't know enough about Cronenberg to speak to that.
I mean, I guess the body horror, but it's just, it's not even a very Cronenberg-y body horror. I haven't seen tons of Cronenberg either, but I think of Cronenberg as, like, fucking gut-wrenching, like, horribly sad plots with tons of gross, disgusting body horror. Which, I mean, I guess this was sad and gross, but not to that extent. Not like The Fly.
Yeah, that sad.
Well, it does sound like it was very, probably scary to be watching it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the trailer looked really scary.
I thought it was very scary, and I loved... the mystery. We talk a lot about how, you know, things don't always stick.
Usually
stick the
solving
landing.
The mystery is
less fun.
Disappointing, but.
And I think that is the case here. But nonetheless, I really enjoyed it. And yeah, Gabby, thank you for picking it. I'm really glad to have seen it.
Yeah, I'm glad to know about it.
And just like Brian Cox is such a good actor. He's just so fun to watch. And. Mm-hmm. A horror movie in which he is the star. Sign me up.
Perfect.
Yeah, sign
anytime.
Me.
Anytime.
I will watch that any day of the week. Any day of the week. Come on.
Yeah. Wow.
It was, yeah, I mean, I don't even know what to say about it, except I hope that that's not a thing where you can be tortured to the point where you become a witch.
I hope not.
And haunt people. For years to come.
I hope so too. As y'all know, I've been dabbling in a bit of witchcraft myself. I haven't come across any of this kind of thing just yet, but I will keep you posted.
Mm-hmm. Please.
Sorcery.
That's right.
There it is.
Any good voices besides the song? Should we just sing the song?
We can sing the song. Do, 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 do. From all of us here. Too scary to watch. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Too Scary Didn't Watch. I'm here to remind you to head on over to Apple Podcasts where you can rate, review, and subscribe if you had as much fun as we did. We're also on Twitter and Instagram at TSDW Podcast. We are also on Patreon at patreon.com/TSDW Podcast. You can sign up for access to things like bonus episodes, bingo cards, send in suggestions, all that type of thing. I think that's it, except for the fact that we love you forever and ever and ever and ever and ever. Okay, see you next week.